yet. Yeah. Yeah, you got one for me as well. One. Excused absence. Hello, AGP. I assume we're live. There we go. Woohoo! Well, thank you. Today is February 6th. We're at 5:30 p.m. at the Vet Center. This is the our monthly Harbor Advisory Board agenda. We'll go ahead and get started. With that, we'll do establish a quorum and call to order. I'll start on my right here. Member Hansen?
Here.
Member O'Brien?
Here.
Member Dowdy?
Here.
Member Myers present. Member Green is out, along with Member Witowski, Marshall Witowski. So that we have, we'll go ahead and call a quorum. Next up is we'll do a moment of silence. All right, thank you. Next up, Member Hansen, would you lead us with the Pledge of Allegiance? All right, well, that was fun. With that, we'll start with the board members and announcements. Ms. Member Hansen, I'll start with you.
Board Member Green will be here in 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay, so where did it go? I have a couple announcements from the different outreach groups that I am a part of. Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce does a monthly Breakfast on the Bay. That is, the next one is February 19th at 7:30 a.m. And it is about thriving in your golden years. And we have three speakers, and they will be serving breakfast. It's a great thing to be a part of. And if anybody is interested in trying it out, I have one free ticket if you want to get a hold of me. Otherwise, you can go on the Chamber website and get your own ticket and bring some friends. Then also, we have the Chamber has the annual summit, March 26th at 11:30 to 2, and we have quite a few speakers, including our mayor, Carla Wixom. And then I am a part of the Morro Bay High School baseball team fundraiser, the Crab Feed. That's Saturday, March 8th at 5 p.m., and you can get your tickets on zeffy.com and just punch in Morro Bay Pirates baseball Crab Feed.
All right, thank you. I'll go down to the other end. Member Dowdy.
Good evening. The bay looks pretty darn healthy right now. We've pulled some moorings recently, and lots of mussels on the bay, on the chains. So that's all real good to see. Now that it looks like the window is open for storms to show up, I'd once again advise people to go out and check your mooring lines. They do wear out. And then I'd like to thank the City Council for approving the appeal from Paul Gillen on his project. It's been a long time, but we'll move forward with it. That's it.
I do have one question for you. I know this, I saw in the Harbor Report there were some record swells. I know we looked at the boats smacking into each other. Was there any elisions from the recent storms?
I talked to the Harbor Department just yesterday, asking if they had any problems from the last little windstorm that came through, and doesn't appear there has been any big issues. So that's good.
All right, thank you. Member O'Brien?
Yeah, the crab guys finally got out and unfortunately didn't find anything. So it really looks incredibly dismal here. They didn't get an early start. The season usually opens like 2 months ago, and the crab had just moved or were not there. So things are really slim pickings. There's a lot of rock cod, really nice rock cod in both of our fish markets. We'd be carrying them, and they're really good, I can tell you that from experience. Oregon crab, the guys are doing pretty good up there, and they're pretty nervous right now because there's quite a large amount of whales have shown up, and they're waiting for the shoe to drop, so to speak. So that's it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Member Green, for showing. Do you have any member announcements?
The liaison groups, right? We're doing liaison?
Just any announcements or liaison.
Okay. Regarding outreach, nothing happening on the Cal Poly front. If it hasn't been said yet, and it may not have come up yet, regarding the Planning Commission activities in relation to council, the project at 431, 451 Embarcadero made it through council, and the next phase will be a Coastal Commission hearing at some point in the not-so-distant future.
All right, thank you. Since I've been working with the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department, I have a few things there. We just started planning the Marine Swap Meet, which is the last weekend in June. I think it's the 29th, something like that. So just started planning that. Expect to have hopefully about 50 vendors like we did last year. So excited. Hopefully that's better. All right. And then we also started looking into some other projects. We have a couple things that we're tentatively looking at, very, very preliminary, but probably redoing the signage on the intake building. That's because of Vistra and the relationship between the city. It's kind of not sure how that's going to go. And a few other things, but excited about that and the role of playing. Yes, sir?
You know, another project that maybe the Friends could work on is the signage for the 5-mile-an-hour wake sign out by Target Rock. It's there, and it's leaning. It's been leaning for several years.
So, okay.
Just an idea.
For the 5-mile. Yeah, that would, that's actually kind of in the budget. It's not too expensive and has a lot of visibility. Thank you.
I was going to say the Fishermen's Organization used to do it with a crane we had available to us at our yard, but we've since sold the crane. Times are tough.
Totally understand. That's the extent of that. With that, we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is a presentation. We're very excited to have the Kumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary do a presentation about 10 or 15 minutes. Paul and Saki, if you guys go ahead, you've got the floor.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thanks, Chairman. Thank you, Commissioners. You had suggested I start with a joke and a song, but if I were to sing, that would be the joke. So we're going to dispense with that. Really appreciate the opportunity to present to you tonight. My name's Paul Michelle. I'm the senior advisor for the regional office up in Monterey, but I'm also wearing a hat as advisor to the new sanctuary here on the Central Coast, and I'm also sort of the interim community government affairs person for the new sanctuary. So we're doing a lot of outreach right now to let the communities know about the new sanctuary's designation, and one of the first orders of business is to set up a sanctuary advisory council so we make sure we hear from various stakeholders, constituencies, and the community. That recruitment is underway, and Sachi's going to talk more about that in a minute. But I thought I'd start with more of an overview. If we could get the slides up for those that don't know about sanctuaries, just thought I'd run through a few slides. So a lot of people may not know this, but sanctuaries, National Marine Sanctuaries, are a whole network of National Marine Sanctuaries that protect and manage over 630,000 square miles of coast and ocean and Great Lakes waters, from Boston to Olympic Coast to American Samoa to Gulf of Mexico, or now Gulf of America. So altogether, you know, we have this whole network of marine sanctuaries that are really more like a national forest than a national park. National forests, as you know, have extractive uses and all kinds of uses, but under this umbrella of resource protection. And we're very much like that too. So things like fishing and shipping and recreation, all those uses occur in national marine sanctuaries. In fact, we like to think that we facilitate those wise and sustainable uses as part of our ongoing management. So we have here on the West Coast, we've got Olympic Coast National Marine Sanctuary, Greater Farallones and Coral Bank National Marine Sanctuaries off San Francisco, the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary that comes all the way down to Cambria. Then we have a little bit of gap, and then we have this new Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary, and I'll show you a map of that in just a second. So what do sanctuaries do? We carry out a diverse array of programs. So our primary mission is resource protection. We do maritime heritage, so we celebrate our maritime landscapes, such as shipwrecks and lighthouses, and really our history of the coast, including indigenous heritage. We do a lot of science. We do a lot of research and monitoring, a lot of education and outreach. One day we hope to build a visitor center here in this area, like we have in other marine sanctuaries. We promote recreation and tourism and responsible wildlife viewing and interaction with the wildlife. And we have a lot of volunteers. We haven't got any set up just yet with this new sanctuary because it's only been designated for a couple of months now. But typically we have volunteers that interact with the public and talk about the marine sanctuary. We have volunteers that do citizen science, water quality testing, just a whole number of things. And I mentioned water quality. We work with local state agencies on water quality assessments, best management practices. At Monterey, we have an Ag Water Quality Alliance where we work with willing ranchers and growers to try new things on their lands to improve water quality. And we just have a number of community partnerships. We're a small organization, only a couple hundred staff for an entire program across the country. So we really rely on local, state, and federal agency partners and just a variety of partners to carry out our programs. So what are the goals for this new sanctuary? Well, it was designated November 30th, and so we've been busy trying to prioritize our management plan, what we're going to be working on first. We've got this recruitment process underway to stand up an advisory council. We just opened up an office on the Cal Poly campus in Technology Park. So we're starting to staff up and hire a couple people just to get us started on implementing a number of programs. And one of the things we'll do is also, because of the name, you can imagine, it was nominated by the Northern Chumash Tribal Council. So we're really intent on engaging and participating with the various bands of Chumash in this collaborative co-stewardship framework that we've worked out with them to make sure that we're being respectful of the indigenous culture and heritage here on the Central Coast and to help tell their story, use language and art and indigenous knowledge that is really unique to this, will be unique to this sanctuary. Let's see, what else? That's really a huge effort underway. There's 8 or 9, 10 different bands of Chumash that we're working with. And the original boundary actually included this area of Morro Bay and the Solanan, but the final boundary, which I'll show you next now, is a little bit south of here. So the management plan we talked about, we have, it just describes the priority issues and goals. It's really our guiding document. It's the blueprint for the activities that staff will undertake for the next 5 to 10 years. And it really ties in the community and public input through an advisory council. We'll have a thing called an Intergovernmental Policy Council, which will be the state of California, the San Ynez Band of Chumash Indians, which is the only federally recognized band of Chumash, and NOAA. And then we'll have an Indigenous Communities Activities Panel, which is all sort of indigenous knowledge holders that will help provide input to the new sanctuary. And there's 12 different action plans. They each have strategies and activities. You'll see if you read through it, it's not a terribly long document, but you'll see just how much we rely on partners, the many agencies and organizations that help us implement these management plans. I won't read through all of this, but just to say it's a pretty diverse set of activities from indigenous heritage, climate change, maritime heritage, offshore energy, water quality, blue economy, which we interpret as helping to facilitate recreation and tourism, addressing wildlife disturbances. We have an action plan called Boundary Adjustment that we'll look at in the next 7 to 10 years, potentially sanctuary protections for this area that was not included at this in this round of sanctuary protections on the Central Coast. And then we have our typical resource protection, research and monitoring, and operations administration action plans. And this sort of, all this verbiage to the right there is sort of our aspirational statement about the indigenous cultural heritage aspect of involving Chumash. And so sanctuary management is really about this maritime cultural heritage work, the tribal engagement, resource protection, research, education outreach. Like I said, it's kind of a repeat of, I just really wanted to make the point about how important it is to have community engagement, because otherwise we're just a paper sanctuary. So we really are keen on having a very robust advisory council with lots of working groups and activity panels and things that will help ensure that there's this bridge between the sanctuary and the community is providing input and vice versa. And so I'm gonna hand it over to Sachi to talk about the advisory council. How am I doing on time? Doing okay? Yeah, so like I said, one of the first orders of business for the new sanctuary is to set up an advisory council, and want to talk to you about it, your help in helping us get the word out about the various seats. Particularly of interest probably to this commission as a recreational fishing seat, a commercial fishing seat, and really many, many others that we want to make a local government seat, many others that we could use your help in getting the recruitment message out there. And yeah, I look forward to hopefully by April, May, having a very first advisory council meeting for this new sanctuary. So thank you for your time. I'll be available for questions. I should say I spent 14 years as the Monterey Bay Sanctuary Superintendent, so have a little bit of experience with advisory councils and sanctuaries and talking with fishermen like Jeremiah O'Brien. So appreciate your time. Thanks. Sachi.
All right, thank you.
Slide deck, but hello, my name is Sachi Koleman. I'm the Sanctuary Advisory Council Coordinator for Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary. Thank you so much for having us here tonight. Looking forward to sharing a little bit more information about the Advisory Council. So just to revisit this image right here, I just want to emphasize that it's easy to focus on these pillars, these activities and programs that the sanctuary is going to carry out, but all of these programs are not possible without a strong foundation of community engagement and partnerships. And so that's really what the Sanctuary Advisory Council is all about. It is a local community body that provides input and advice to the superintendent on sanctuary management. So this is really important because it helps us to guide our management based on the ground knowledge. So the start of this meeting that you all were having, you were sharing really important information that only you know because you're here part of this community. And we really need that facilitation between our local community members and larger sanctuary management. So that's one reason why people choose to get involved in the Sanctuary Advisory Council, is to have that kind of direct input to sanctuary management. Another benefit of participating in the Sanctuary Advisory Council is that you also get to network with other council members. So we are really seeking to gather a diverse group of people with many different perspectives from different industries, whether that's research, conservation, fishing, tourism, offshore, energy and technology. We'll go through the list later. But really bringing all of these different players and perspectives to the table to have meaningful discussion about the issues that we're seeing in our oceans and figuring out the best way to come together to reach agreement on how to address those problems. Another great thing about the Sanctuary Advisory Council is that it is also an open community forum. So whether you're a member or not, you can still come to these meetings, you can learn about what's going on, and you can also participate in public comment, or as I'll talk more about, working groups that will kind of be an offshoot of the Sanctuary Advisory Council. So I'm sure you're all curious to know how an advisory council is structured and what we really do. So I kind of gave you an overview, but the way that this advisory council will be structured is there are 15 voting seats. 12 of those are public seats, which you can kind of see on the right hand of this slide here, and then 3 of those seats are government voting seats. They're meant to reflect a variety of interests and experiences. And one thing you should know about applying for these public seats is that really the main requirement for the application is that you will act as a liaison between your community and our advisory council. So you are there representing yourself in a personal capacity, but you're also meant to be really committed to reaching out to your constituents, those people that you represent, and bringing their ideas and input into our council. There's also a handful of non-voting seats. For various reasons, there's just the way that the National Marine Sanctuaries Act was amended. We can only have 15 voting seats in new sanctuaries, so we were just limited in that capacity. But we wanted more participation, especially from students as well as other government agencies. So we do have various non-voting seats. So these are people like Fish and Wildlife, the Department of Defense, BOEM, BSEE, other government agencies that will have a seat at that table and will be able to hear the community's input and also be able to answer questions that the community has. And then finally, there's opportunities for non-advisory council members to also participate. We have various subcommittees and working groups that could be formed. These are kind of like special interest topics. So for example, just south of us, the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary has some working groups focused on education. So it's led by a council member, and then they go out into their community, they gather a group of people together that are really interested in increasing educational opportunities within the sanctuary. That group can get together and then directly provide input and findings to the advisory council, which then is relayed to the superintendent. So there's just various ways to be involved, which takes me to the next point, which is how do you get involved? If you are interested in being on the Sanctuary Advisory Council, you can apply for one of these seats. Each seat has a member and an alternate position. So 15 seats, but it would be about 30 members. And this application period is open until March 7th. All of our application materials are live on our website. You can also scan that QR code right there if you're curious and you want to look at it right now. But all of that information is there, including more detailed information on the specific seat descriptions. So if you're curious, should I apply for this seat? Do I fit in here? You can read those descriptions, and it can help you figure it out. Additionally, you are more than welcome to just email me directly. My email is on that website and on that application. So if you have any questions, you can reach out. And then just once your application is submitted, we will begin reviewing them after all the applications have been received, closing on March 7th. We create a review panel. And that review panel basically reads all of the applications, selects their top three candidates as a recommendation to the superintendent. The superintendent will then review the recommendations and call those people in for interviews and then provide his or her recommendation to the director of National Marine Sanctuaries, who then has the final decision. So it's kind of a multi-step process, but we try to build in this review panel that is not composed of NOAA sanctuaries people to be able to evaluate these applications and then provide a recommendation to the superintendent, who then reviews those applications upon those recommendations. So if you are interested, you can apply online until March 7th. If you have more questions, I'll be here, but you can also email me if you think of anything later. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. It's open until the March 7th. Go ahead.
I apologize if I didn't hear. I was totally listening. Did you mention like how often they meet and for how long you plan to meet?
Yeah, So that's a great question. And I didn't cover that because it's actually up to the Sanctuary Advisory Council to determine the frequency of meetings and agree upon kind of the locations and the style, I guess you could call it, like whether it's fully remote, hybrid, or only in person. So I will be responsible for helping to arrange that first meeting to get everyone together. But then at that meeting, we will be, the group will elect a chair, vice chair, and secretary, which is kind of what we call the executive committee, that's really involved in agenda planning. And they will also help to facilitate conversations around where do we want to be hosting our meetings? Is it going to be half of the meetings in northern Santa Barbara County and the other half in SLO County? How often will they be? Will they be 4 hours? Will they be 8 hours? Lots of questions up in the air, but it's really exciting because it means that whoever these people are that are forming this first advisory council are kind of getting to lay the groundwork for what these meetings will look like in the future.
So as just to get a kind of a little bit more of an idea, for the Monterey one, do you know how long the term lasted for this board?
The charter and protocols for this new sanctuary will be very similar to the other advisory councils in California. So they're 3-year terms. And so what we like to do is stagger those. So about half the council will go for the first like 3.5 years, and the other half will go for the 3 years. So we're gonna have a huge, massive turnover all at the same time. But they're 3-year terms. So oftentimes what happens is that the alternate then becomes the primary, right? And then so that there's that institutional knowledge of someone who's as an alternate who's been around, been to meetings for 3 years, can then really step into that primary role.
All right, perfect.
And I should mention, I'd fail to say that local, state, and federal agencies don't have to apply. They get to pick who they want to represent them. So as a city of Morro Bay, well, actually, Morro Bay is not even in the sanctuary. And I failed to mention or even show the map, which I should probably do, because the northern boundary begins just south of Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant and extends 116 miles south and then due east to Gaviota. So it is that very northernmost part of Santa Barbara County and a big chunk of San Luis Obispo County. So this area between Diablo and Cambria is not included in the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary. That was the final boundary. You may have seen like earlier boundary alternatives that included this area, but the final decision was to exclude this area. Not to say that you don't have a voice on an advisory council or have the ability to influence through your participation or even have people that in your community that want to apply to be on this advisory council that have activities or influence all up and down this coast. So I wanted to make sure I had covered that because that's kind of an important piece, right? You're like, should we be doing this? Or not?
Yeah. I actually have a somewhat related question. One of the things that comes up most often in town since the final version, the map version came out, is sort of this concern bordering on kind of suspicion, what's going to be the impacts on this gap between zones. Now, not to address that part, but are there other examples of gaps between national marine sanctuaries along the Pacific coast that we could sort of use as a model for concerns locally that we could bring up at like the advisory council?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one is San Francisco County, right? San Francisco County was not included in the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. Or the Farallones advisory or sanctuary many, many years ago. There was just issues with the city and county not even having secondary wastewater treatment. There were issues with the ports and harbors, the Port of Oakland, Port of San Francisco, concerned about interference with shipping and the shipping lanes, and all of the beach nourishment that occurs on Ocean Beach, the Army Corps of Engineers project. So at the time, this was back in the 80s and 90s, it was determined that should not be a national marine sanctuary. It didn't fit with being a national marine sanctuary. It's been this gap ever since. That's an example of one that has continued for many years.
Any rural examples that you can think of?
No.
Okay, all right. I'm just curious.
All right, you member room, any other questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you guys for the presentation. And I was just curious, because it appears, anyway, that the sanctuary has given up a large portion of the northern section to the Wind people, and I'm sure you had some pretty good arguments for doing that, coming from D.C., but in any case, if the Wind fails, as it's doing on the East Coast now, will the sanctuary expand to the north? Has that been discussed, talked about, or planned from the previous?
So we wanted to give this new sanctuary sufficient time to get up and running and established. And in the final management plan, there is a boundary adjustment plan, and it essentially just says in 7 years, we will begin a process to examine whether or not there needs to be sanctuary protections in this area that between Cambria and Diablo. A couple of really interesting issues there, because the original boundary included Slenen homeland, that the Slenen were very not happy that we might name this area Chumash. It was that plus the influence of the offshore wind energy companies on that final boundary, the number of subsea energy transmission cables that might come from the Morro Bay wind energy area to connect here in Morro Bay and Diablo heavily influenced that final boundary. So this kind of gives this time to unfold, 7 to 10 years before we might look at a boundary adjustment, because once those cables are in, we can easily grandfather those in. So that was sort of the thinking at the time, and just give you some perspective on that's the boundary we ended up with, and that's our plan for the future to maybe continue to consider sanctuary protections in that area, in this area.
Thank you.
Gene?
Yeah, I was just looking at that list of your advisory committee, and it just seems to me like it's just a great big bureaucracy with a lot of people. My concern is that the commercial fishermen are just one person, one part of that advisory committee, and my recommendation is they get a larger vote, because they're the ones that are actually out there working on the water every day, and I think that they should have a better say-so. My other question is that can you guarantee to me or assure me that there will be not any additional commercial fishing restrictions in the Cumet Heritage area?
What I can say is that we didn't propose any fishing regulations in the Chumash regulations. I can't speak for the National Marine Fisheries Service or for the state of California. They do what they do. We don't get involved with fishing regulations. So unless there's some big issue that arises that we think we need to ask them to take action or work with fishermen to see it, but we didn't propose any fishing regulations. We didn't see the need to. So, every 5 to 10 years, we review our management plans and regulations. So I can't speculate if that would happen in the future, but if you look at the history of National Marine Sanctuaries, you'll see that there's really very little, if none, federal sanctuary fishing regulations.
Can you tell me that there will be no restrictions on the public?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
A recreational boat going through the...
The only regulation that might impact recreational boating is discharges, but we exempt things like discharges associated with lawful fishing. So we exempt like fishing activities. So this would be like an egregious spill or dumping that would violate our regulations.
The reason I bring this up is I really don't trust you guys. I know what happened up in Monterey, where the commercial fishermen gave you guys all of their areas where sustainable fishing was at, and then you said, great, you can't fish there anymore. And that's why I'm leery about this Chumash Heritage Sanctuary.
Well, just to be clear, that was a state of California action. That was not a federal National Marine Sanctuary action. Are you talking about the state marine protected areas?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a state action.
And you had no say-so in this?
No, we were just one of many stakeholders in that process.
Okay.
Thank you, Paul. Any other questions?
I don't have a question, but did you apply to do this, Cal?
As a matter of fact, I did.
Well, Cal applied, and so his name is in there. And if I hope you do get in, and if you do, I would love to have you come back here and, like, let us know when they have openings for workshops or subcommittees, and so we can be a part of it that way and hear back from what you learn, well, hopefully.
I'm excited to, if I get selected. Yes, sir.
So as everybody knows, the commercial fishing industry has been actively working against sanctuaries over 30 years now. And so when they say, when the sanctuary says that they do not make rules and regulations for the fishing industry, that is not untrue. Now, when something, as was just discussed, such as the state marine sanctuaries, then they took an active part in supporting that and even submitted many drawings and so forth for areas to be closed. Now, with influence like they wield, and a couple of guys dressed in jeans like myself, you know the outcome. We all know the outcome. So no, they do not write the regulation, but they actively pursue that regulation to be enacted. So it. You can look at it any way you want, but I can tell you when you're on the bottom, you're always looking up.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that insight, Member O'Brien. Any other final comments? Nope. All right, again, we really appreciate your time and your coming out, and look forward to hopefully we'll maybe have you back in 6 months after you guys get formed up, and some one of us can reply, or you guys can do a bigger presentation about where you're at. Look forward to hearing back from you guys and the success. Sure. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. With that, we'll go ahead and open public comment. We have our lone guest in. I know, the whole audience here. Is there anybody here in the audience that'd like to make a public comment? I don't see any raised hands. AGP, is there anybody on the phone with a?
No, we do not have anybody online.
I asked. Member Landrum, Council Member Landrum. Yeah, I asked her earlier. We're good. We will skip that. Yeah, thank you, Eugene. With that, we'll close public comment. Next, we have the consent calendar. Is there anybody want to pull anything from the consent calendar, the 2 meeting minutes? We are caught up. Thank you. Thank you, Lori. And the status report? Motion to accept the consent calendar?
I move that we approve the consent calendar as is.
I guess I'll second that. Ayes?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. All right. Well, with that, we'll move on to business item B1. Arlen, do you want to speak about this one first for a minute?
I do. So good evening, Hub. I'm Arlen Singwald, your community development director. I'm going to speak about the waterfront master plan update and then get the appointee from Harbor Advisory Board to the waterfront master plan advisory committee, which I've been referring to as WAMPAC for short. So just very brief background. So as I believe, the board is aware, the city received a $750,000 local assistance, planning assistance grant from the California Coastal Commission to update the Waterfront Master Plan. Waterfront Master Plan was first adopted in 1996. It has not been updated since then. It's part of the city's official local coastal program, so it is a very important part of the city's overall land use planning regulations. It is, at its core, the city's vision for development, land use, circulation, and infrastructure for the waterfront. The current waterfront master plan extends from Tidelands Park north to Morrow Rock And the council direction for the waterfront master plan update is to extend it further north to cross Little Morrow Creek and include the former wastewater treatment plant site. The Plan Morrow Bay, so city's general plan and local coastal plan, includes a policy that states prior to any future redevelopment of the wastewater treatment plant site, a master plan needs to be prepared. So including that site in the waterfront master plan update could satisfy that requirement. So I'm going to give just a very kind of brief list of the major components of the waterfront master plan update. We did just today publish the request for proposals for consultants to bid on preparing the waterfront master plan update and the related sea level rise analysis. The RFP, which is posted on the city's bid posting website, includes a fairly detailed summary of all of the components of the waterfront master plan. And the brief version of that is it includes a vision and goals for future development, land use, circulation, and infrastructure on the waterfront, an updated sea level rise analysis, vulnerability assessment, and adaptation plan, a plaza plan and parking relocation plan for redeveloping street and parking lots on the west side of the Embarcadero into public plazas, a master planning for the former wastewater treatment plant site and decommissioned power plant property. And of course, there was an initial work effort on a power plant master plan for Vistra's battery plant proposal. Any existing information from that master plan will be reused to the extent that it makes sense. So we're not duplicating that information and that work effort, but this would be a new master planning for the power plant property that's included in the waterfront master plan and considers future land use on the power plant property in more of a comprehensive manner, also considering the surrounding other waterfront properties. Also, an identification of public facilities, infrastructure, and spaces needed to support the working waterfront, commercial fishing industry, and harbor. And the council also directed that the waterfront master plan update have some consideration for if offshore wind development were to move forward and a waterfront infrastructure were to be developed in the harbor for offshore wind development, what that might look like and have that just be considered in the scope for the waterfront master plan update. So the reason why we're here tonight, other than to give an update on waterfront master plan, is again to receive the appointee from HAB to the WMPAC. On January 14th, the council approved the formation of the WMPAC. It's a seven-member advisory council. It would include one appointee from each of the five existing advisory committees, one appointee from the Embarcadero Master Leaseholders Group, and one appointee from the National Estuary Program. And the WMPAC would provide stakeholder input and policy direction to staff and the consultant as we develop the draft waterfront master plan and take it to the Planning Commission. So WMPAC is not replacing the Planning Commission's role. The Planning Commission will have their normal role for any planning document where they ultimately review a draft to make a recommendation to council. But the WMPAC is more of a steering committee to work with staff and the consultant to develop the draft that goes to the Planning Commission. The WMPAC is a Brown Act body like the other advisory committees, and I anticipate they would meet monthly, and I anticipate a time commitment of approximately 8 to 12 hours per month. And the total time frame, so the estimated completion date of the Waterfront Master Plan update is November 30th, 2026. I think it's fair to say it would at least be a two-year effort that the WMPAC would be involved. And I'm available for questions.
Any questions? Gene?
Yeah, I have several. I was on the original Waterfront Master Plan. And at that time, they decided that not to discuss anything that was over the water. The construction of the waterfront deals intricately with eelgrass. And so somehow I think in your waterfront master plan, there should be some kind of mitigation for eelgrass. It's an integral part of the development of the waterfront. My next question was, if it's for 2 to 3 years, how many of our board members are going to be here in 2 years? I know I won't, and so that leaves me out. So that's a question on how you deal with that. Thank you.
Member O'Brien, you have Questions, comments?
So yeah, I was just...
Should I respond now?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Questions.
Sorry, I took the pause as no comment.
No, the pause was I was looking in the RFP because we specifically added a bullet point. So for the scope of work, asking for a programmatic eelgrass mitigation program. But the next sentence is, depending on budget availability, this may be incorporated into the plan as a future implementation action. So this is a good example of where the master plan is more of a long-range conceptual planning document. It's not going to necessarily have all of the implementations and future regulations and programs built into it itself. That would be too much to complete all at once. It's sort of like the city's general plan, where it's more of a vision and goal-setting document, but it will have implementation actions to set a roadmap to achieve the plan. So at a minimum, that would be incorporated as a program for future action, so at least it would set kind of the framework for that to happen in the future. But depending on budget availability and what type of proposals we get back, there could be an opportunity to have something more specific actually built into the master plan itself.
Thank you.
And then to your second question, it is, a two-year effort. The council direction was fairly clear that the representatives should be current members of advisory boards, and I think that's important because another role of the WMPAC representative I didn't really mention in my presentation is they're going to serve as a liaison between the WMPAC on the Waterfront Master Plan update effort and the rest of the board. So we want them on the board coming back, you know, to listen from other board members and bring that information back to the WMPAC and vice versa. So short answer is it should be a representative who would be on the advisory board for the next 2 years.
Just a couple other questions really quickly. Are there going to be design standards in this project?
Yeah, so as you know very well, Board Member Dowdy, the current Waterfront Master Plan has a design guidelines chapter, and the scope of work includes updating that section of the Waterfront Master Plan.
As well as public benefit concerns?
There is a item in the RFP asking the consultant to look at developing an inventory of the public benefits that would be needed up and down the waterfront.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had asked earlier about the expansion or the parking situation at the Rock, if that was going to be looked into in the Waterfront Master Plan, and it was an affirmative. And did your expansion of the waterfront go north of the creek, of Little Morrow Creek?
Yeah, it goes north and includes the former wastewater treatment plant site.
Oh, okay, good. The reason I said that is because I haven't heard anybody yet. I think this is going to be a project that's going to cost the city a lot of money. Is it when we do the parking lot at the Rock? And I'm not for or against or anything else. I'm just making a point. When you do the parking lot at the Rock, then right now there's dozens, every day, dozens and dozens of surfers parked down there. And if they have to go, or if they have to pay to continue to go down there, they're going to move around by the high school and down by the creek. There's a lot of parking down there now in the sand, and I think that place will be impacted, super impacted. So something would probably have to be done simultaneously with the parking lot. It would seem to me, anyways.
And if I could respond just with a couple of thoughts that come to mind. So first of all, the Waterfront Master Plan update, it's designed to implement a number of the policies that we currently have in Plan Morrow Bay. And specifically, so Land Use Policy 8.1 states, update the 1996 Waterfront Master Plan with a focus on addressing issues of sea level rise and future planning of Morrow Rock. So future planning of Morrow Rock is kind of a core element of the Waterfront Master Plan update as established here in the general plan. My second comment is, there already has been, I'm sure as the board is aware, there's been a paid parking program study that was done, and that's referenced in the RFP, so the consultant can refer to that and build on that as they work on the Waterfront Master Plan update. And the example you bring up is a great example of the type of, you know, policy issue that the WMPAC is going to have to work through in making a recommendation.
All right, thank you. I'm Cherise.
I'm on. Okay, so I had that same question about terming out. When I first applied to be on the Harbor Advisory Board, they had the eelgrass mitigation subcommittee going on. And so a very good board member, Lynn Meissen, was there, so she applied. And so it was just a definite that she was going to move forward because she was on a pivotal subcommittee. And so I didn't get it that time. And it's okay, I tried again, and I got in. But I'm just wondering, because we do have an issue. We have two interesting issues here. One, two of us are leaving in 2 years. Two of us are leaving in 1 year. It is a concern. Like, if we're going to pick somebody, we want somebody who's going to be able to stay and keep going with that subcommittee. And I assume you're going to have this issue up and down the advisory boards. So I know that in this situation, Jeans is actually going away because they reduced the size of the committees. I'm just wondering, he would be such an asset to be on it because he was also part of the one that happened in, 96. So I just a really good follow through of just background and knowledge that it would be nice to have him on there. But knowing that his position, he can't even apply again to get it again. Is there any stipulations that we could make on that behalf, that as they're reducing the numbers and having him fall out, if he were to be the one that we so decide? And then the same thing with Sean, if we decided for him, he's leaving in a year, I would just kind of want to know, hey, are you going to apply again?
Right. It won't be my decision.
Right, exactly. So just we kind of cut ourselves down considerably with that. So do you have any fallback ideas of what can happen to make sure that the same committee members that we choose are still going to be committee members for the duration of this?
So we wouldn't be able to guarantee that because, as you know, there's a whole process for reappointing or appointing committee members. And the council, again, was pretty specific in their direction on the WMPAC formation. I would point out that the WMPAC isn't going to be the only forum or venue for public participation. There's going to be multiple community workshops. And not only that, we would certainly point our consultant to meet with Mr. Dowdy because of all of his vast experience on the waterfront. I have also, in the scope of work of the RFP that posted today, we're asking the consultant to do like key stakeholder interviews. So I think the knowledge of the various community members along the waterfront would definitely be used and engaged in the planning process outside of the formal WMPAC.
Okay. What would be the result? Oh, you're gonna.
Can I chime in really quick? Yeah. I wasn't under the impression that we hadn't even talked about, like, this didn't even really come up. I didn't really think about this until just now. Like, if someone termed out, how that would work, and if they would be replaced, and all of that, like, kind of new. Think about. And we could, could we just replace that person? Would that be bad if they termed out? I mean, it seems kind of limiting to especially with this board as it's shrinking, to eliminate people based on their term length.
The way we sit right now from this board, it's basically Jeremiah and myself are the only two that
can. Right.
And that depends on who wants to volunteer.
And Marshall.
And Marshall's not here.
Right, but it would be the three of you.
Correct. Yeah. Well, technically there's four. Cherise can't go, but, as of right
now. I can't go.
We don't want to lose the opportunity for the best person for the best job.
Yeah, I don't. It's my understanding that it doesn't have to be. It doesn't. It's regardless of your term, but.
So, yeah. Oh, that's correct. Let me clarify this. Like as Councilmember Landrum mentions, this exact scenario did not come up at City Council. When I say council was clear, they were clear on the representatives are appointees of each of the individual advisory boards. I'm thinking out loud on this. So if we were to have a advisory board member who's on the WAMPAC and then they term out, it'd be important for them to come to all of the advisory board meetings still to act in that capacity as a liaison to the full advisory board and hear input from the advisory board to take back to the WAMPAC. Logistically, without discussing this with city attorney and city manager, I guess I'm not comfortable with saying that that is something that would be able to work.
So I have a suggestion. Well, two things. One, there's certain criteria that once you're on a board, you have to abide by certain guidelines, and you're also wearing your HAB hat. So I might be a particular person that only wants this kind of thing, but when I go to one of the subcommittees, I am us and what's best for the harbor. And so you want to maintain that. So I guess the other part that I'm asking is, it's a unique situation that we're reducing in size, but with this subcommittee, if we can maintain that one extra seat till the end of that committee is finished, that might be something that makes us want to do it, choose him over somebody else. And so is that something that you can take back?
It's something I can certainly take back. That's certainly not a decision I can make, but that's a decision I can, or an idea I could take back. Another idea that comes to mind as I think about this is we could have, let's say, HAB wanted to appoint a board member who's going to term out in a year. That board member could be the WAMPAC member for a year, and then when that year is up, during that time, we could have a discussion at staff level, maybe bring it to council to see if those members can continue on the WAMPAC for the next year. Or if that's not possible, then HAB would just have to appoint a new representative who is a current member of HAB.
Okay, yeah, I would say that would be the final thing, is that once that person terms out, then the HAB, we do this again and pick a new person. Unfortunately, that doesn't keep them along the timeline that, and the knowledge that the person that's already been in the air for a year. So anyway, that's stuff for us to chew on as far as picking it. I wanted to say a couple of other things and then mention something. You guys were staff recommendation. One of them was 9 members. And I was on the lease policy subcommittee, and I think we were like 11 or 9 or 11. And, people came and went, and we did have representatives on there, and we switched out, and it worked out pretty good. But on this particular situation, with everybody who is involved in making sure that every group is represented in here, I feel that there's two groups that are being overlooked, and that is the fishing. So I know that we're all speaking for the HAB here, but the HAB is not just about fishing. And they did actually say that at the council meeting, that, if we get somebody from HAB, that's fishing. But it's not a good enough representation, because we're all here from different things about the harbor, and that's about the land, that's about the water, it's about all the Tidelands Trust area, the budget. But I do feel that there should be an additional person from the fishing industry involved in that to possibly go to 8. And then the other one that could be missing once everybody is chosen from these advisory boards is you might be missing out on a single business owner. So even though you have the Embarcadero master leaseholders, you might end up with just a property owner, not an actual business operator. And when we were on the lease policy, Erica Crawford, who is the chamber CEO, who is not supposed to be biased about one particular business or one style of business who's supposed to encompass all of the different things that businesses do in economic development. So I would suggest that go up to the nine and do the chamber CEO, because it's all about business and making sure that they're represented, and the CEO is supposed to do that for all businesses, not just one. So that's my two cents to take back. And then I did want to specify that all of these people that are going from these advisory boards, they are representing the importance of that advisory board. They're really not supposed to just go into this WOMPAC and have their own personal views. They're supposed to represent the advisory board that they are being represented by. I just feel that, like I said, the HAB is not just fishing. It's about budget. It's about safety. It's about boating. It's about a lot of things. So the other thing that I noticed at the city council meeting is that because the Embarcadero master leaseholders have a spot, I just want to also know that in 2 years when I term out, I was originally brought in as a leaseholder as a sublease. I was not a master leaseholder. So if that position or if that comes out in the future, it's about anybody that has a business on the Embarcadero that has the business permit from the Harbor Department. So anyway.
All right, with all that said, I'm gonna go ahead and end discussion. Sean, do you have one more? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. First off, I'm eligible. I'm on HAB. We can confirm that there's no at-large membership on the as dictated by council. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So, in terms of someone representing the people of Morbay without, as opposed to a direct interest in a specific board, there's no at-large membership. Like HAB has one at-large member right now, and this one doesn't have any. I think Jeremiah brought up a really good point about the northern scope of the waterfront master plan. I'm sort of trusting that it's the inclusion of the water treatment facility there is sort of the northern boundary, and that would extend west to all those parking areas that are super relevant, especially as more rock comes into play. Is there a westbound or eastbound perimeter to the waterfront master plan?
So the boundary for the waterfront master plan, well, let me step back. First, there is to the existing waterfront master plan. For the update, the boundary hasn't been established yet, and that would really be one of the first tasks of the WOMPAC, working with staff and the consultant to finalize what those boundaries would be.
All right. I think it's a really, really important question to see eastbound where that sort of meets up with the downtown district. I think that's it. I think those are all the questions that I had. I appreciate it.
All right, so then I'm going to pull it back. So this is going to be somewhat interesting given some of the constraints. I'm going to look to Jeremiah, are you interested in this position?
No, at this time, no. I'd like to, I was kind of hoping you were going Or actually.
Yeah, so I'm going to start with, so you would be the easiest, you'd be the easiest one given some of the other logistical constraints, not necessarily the best. I don't want to have this come out wrong. There's some other folks on there that might do it. So, I just wanted to check, Jeremiah.
It would be the most logical. Yeah. I would do it if there was.
Yeah. Let me go get through this. So this is kind of awkward. So bear with me here. Gene, I assume minus the 1 year commitment issue, you would be interested in participating in this.
Yes, as long as there's no conflict of interest with my business.
Oh, interesting. Okay, let me hold that for a thought. Sean, I assume you would also be interested in this as well?
Yes, I'm interested in this position.
Okay. So you have two people that are going to both term out. it was very explicit about the EML. Although I am interested, I don't feel I want to participate at this time because of other personal stuff going on. So I don't know. I'm at a loss to proceed. The two people that have the most interest in it right now can't participate.
So thinking back on the council direction for the composition of the WOMPAC, I think technically if someone is an active member of an advisory board, they should be eligible to be appointed to the WOMPAC. There's just, you know, no certainty that they're going to be able to continue on past the first year after they term out.
It's not as straightforward as it seemed, is it? Can we, and I guess this is Lori for you, nominate somebody to participate, even though with these some conditions that we have to get approved and then maybe have a backup?
So, you know, going back to what I just said, I think that is possible, and we heard the suggestion that I could, you know, take back to city manager and possibly council regarding, you know, retaining that seat until completion of Waterfront Master Plan, but we, you know, there's no guarantee of that. But I think, again, you know, technically, if someone's an active HAB member right now, they should be eligible to be appointed to the WOMPAC.
So, sitting in as we have two people that are interested, we can do a vote by paper or by hands. Or somebody can nominate, and then we vote on it that way by hands.
And if it helps, so I've been to three advisory bodies now for this, and they've just made a nomination with a motion, second, and vote.
Yeah, that's fine. That's why we'll do. I don't think we'll have to do this anonymous, although it is tempting because it's sort of a beauty contest at this point. I'm going to go with Gene. I would like to nominate Gene unless...
You're going to make a motion?
You're going to make a motion. Somebody can...
Second the motion.
And then we can vote for it. I'm sorry, Sean.
It's a mystery, man.
I guess we'll do a voice vote.
Yep.
Voice vote. We'll start over there. And eyes.
Well, I have to add amendment to your motion.
Okay.
That there's no... conflict of interest with my business.
Oh. Let me pause there for a minute.
I mean, really, this city attorney would be the best person to advise on that, but let's think about it for a minute. I mean, your involvement would be providing, you know, input and policy direction with the rest of the WOMPAC, you know, resulting in a recommendation to the Planning Commission on the creation of a planning document. So at this moment, I can't think of a immediate conflict of interest that would result from that. But again, really, the city attorney would be the best to advise.
You can always recuse yourself during the committee meeting if you feel like there's something that you're voting on or deciding on that would benefit you if it went a direction.
The whole design issue of it. Yeah, with a caveat, I just need to know that I have to talk with the attorney, city attorney first, and then if there's an issue, then I'll have to step down and recommend Sean take the second leaf.
Shall I restate the motion?
I can restate the motion because there was also my comp. Well, no, we already did it, so now we have to vote, right?
Well, amendment to the motion.
Amendment to the motion? Okay.
You can make an amendment to the motion.
It's based on speaking with the lawyer, city lawyer, if there is going to be a conflict of interest for you to be in there. And then I would like to add to request that council extend your seat on the HAB until the WOMPAC committee has completed. Amendment to the amendment. You get a second?
Second.
Or did you catch all that? That's recorded. All right. Ayes?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Okay.
Nay.
4-1 and motion carries. All right. That was more complicated than I expected. All right. With that, we will move. There's no, well, we didn't do public comment, Lori, but I think we're okay. All right. All right. Just for the grins and giggles, public comment in the audience? Nope. AGP, is there anybody with their hand raised in the queue?
No, sir. There is no one in the queue with their hand raised.
Thank you. With that, we'll move to item B2, which is the chair and vice chair. This one hopefully is pretty straightforward. I will just start that I'd be more than happy to continue on as a chair, but I would have anybody that wants to share that pleasure. I'm more than happy to have anybody else do it if they are so interested.
Well, I'd like to nominate you, Cal, for your continued performance.
All right. So the motion, I guess it was seconded. All ayes?
Ayes.
Ayes. All right. With that, we'll move to the vice chair. I guess we'll start. Charisse, are you still interested in continuing on?
I would like to nominate Charisse for vice chair.
Second.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, voice vote. Ayes.
Aye.
5-0. With that, we'll just touch on some future.
Who second?
Oh, public comment.
Who second this?
Sean.
Okay. Thank you.
With that, we'll go ahead and close B2 unless there's any public comment, but I don't think there is. Thank you. I guess we got a lot of interesting. I think next time we should get an update on the Coleman Park based on some of the stuff we have. It would be nice to see that on the agenda next week. Some inside information that there may be some updates, significant updates on that. So I'm pretty excited. I saw some stuff from one of the council members. So maybe we'll have that. Obviously, we'll have the Waterfront Master Plan update next month. Any other future agenda items? Nope. With that, Lori, I think we're...
Do you have consensus from another board member that you want Coleman Park update?
Oh, I'm sorry. Consensus that we would like to have a Coleman Park update?
I agree.
One, two...
It's already a future agenda item, so you can make it because you're the chair again.
All right.
Make it so.
All right. I think we have consensus, Lori. We'll have it on the agenda for next month. With that, we'll meet again in March. All right. Meeting adjourned. March. I know. Hard to believe.